as we all know, Tchelet, the mitzvah of Tchelet was lost probably about 1,300 years ago in the 7th century. And the question is, from a theological perspective, why was it lost? How was it lost? Can it ever be regained? And so on and so forth. And there's a very important midrash, the Tanchuma, in Parshat Shlach, that that tells us, "Ve'achshav ein lanu elo lavan sha'tchelet nignaz." So, since we don't have tchelet anymore, since tchelet was lost, nignaz, hidden, we bring white, we wear white on our tzitzit. And the question is, what exactly does this mean? It was hidden away, nignaz. The fact that the Tanchuma in the 8th century tells us Achshav ein lanu elo lavan, there is nothing but white, we don't have tchelet, this was actually used by Rav Herzog to indicate that by then, by the 8th century, tchelet was indeed lost. And he dated the loss of tchelet to around 630-639 with the conquest of the Arabs of Eretz Israel, and this was his major proof for that. That already by the time of the Tanchuma, Tchelet is lost. Tchelet is gone. But this question, nignaz, Tchelet, hidden away. Well, it actually is based on a much earlier medrash in the Sifri. In the Sifri Devarim, Vizot HaBracha, the bracha to Shevet Zvulun, and Zvulun, of course, was known as those who dealt with the Tchelet, Sifune Temune Chol, the treasures hidden in the sand, and so on. These are associated with the Chilazon, the source, the marine source, the snail, that was the source of the Tchelet. And here the Sifri tells us, Piska Shin Nun Dalet, Amar Rab Yossi. We're talking about Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. And the Sifri is very, very old. One of the earliest Midrashim, certainly to the 4th century. By then it was already completely edited and redacted. And it's attributed to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who lived even earlier. And here we're talking about Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, who is living in the early in the 2nd century, a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Pa'am achat, Hayiti mahalech mechziv litzor. So he was walking from Chziv, modern-day Achziv, all the way up to Tyre, probably walking past Rosh HaNikra. U'matzati zaken echad v'shalti b'shalom. I found an older man and asked him how he was. Amarti lo panasatcha b'mahu. What do you do for a living? Rabbi Yossi asks this old man. Amar li b'chilazon. I make my living from catching the chilazon, the source of the Tchelet, Amar Tilo. So Rabbi Yossi says to the old man, the old fisherman, V'chi Matsui, who is it indeed to be found? Can it be found? Amar Li, so the old fisherman told Rabbi Yossi, Hashamay, Sheyesh Makom Bayam Shemutal Beharim, V'samamiyot Makifot Oto, V'ein Chadam Sholech L'sham She'ein Samamiyot Makishot Oto, U'meit V'nimak B'mekomo. I'm going to read this in the English translation. He replied, by heaven, there is a place beneath the sea, nestled among the mountains, that is surrounded by poisonous spiders, and no one can go there without suffering a fatal bite that rots his body away on the spot. Oh dear. Amarti, so Rabbi Yossi said, Nikar hu sheganuz l'tzadikim le'atid lavo. Well, it's clear, Rabbi Yossi says from this, that it is hidden away, again, the milah, the word ganuz, nignaz, for tzadikim, for the righteous, in the world to come. Okay, so this clearly is the basis, one might say, for the Tanchuma, that Tchelet was hidden away. This story about Rabbi Yossi is quite fantastic, frightening. You have poison spiders, these monstrous creatures that are guarding the Tchelet. And I'm not the first to point out that this is probably a metaphor. The poisonous spiders are not necessarily real monsters, creatures, but rather, as Rav Eliyahu Tevger pointed out in an article of his called L'Meshma'ut Nignaz B'Divrei Chazal, And Rav Ben Sion Halberstam has recently spoken about this, and you can find both of these on our website on YU Torah. Rav Halberstam's discussion is on YU Torah. Rav Eliyahu Tevger came to the idea based on a linguistic understanding of the word nignaz and the correlation with beit geniza, or a storehouse, safeguarding that kings had. And Rav Halberstam came upon it in a slightly different way. Rav Halberstam pointed us to a medrash. The medrash Tzechel Tov is where I found it, where you find that the term samamiyut, I'll quote from the medrash Tzechel Tov in Bereshit Pashat Kafchet Toldot, samamit hi malchut harisha'a. So the samamit, these poisonous spiders, are actually a metaphor for the evil empire, namely Rome. And again, Rav Tevger came to the same conclusion, and I think that that's something that we can easily understand, that Rav Yossi is talking to us and telling us that the Tchelet has been, although the Tchelet can be found technically, one can find the Chilazon, one can collect these Chilazonot and make Tchelet, but the secret is guarded, the monopoly has been given over to the Romans, they guard it very, very carefully, and anybody who is involved in Tchelet making, or even owning Tchelet, well, that's something that is extremely, extremely dangerous. You don't want to get involved in that. And in fact, we know this to be true. The Romans jealously guarded the Tchelet making industry. And as one example of this, if you look at the Codex Justinianus from about 529, the Emperor Justinian, who put together a compendium of laws for Rome, in Book 440, what cannot be sold, and people who are forbidden to sell or buy. And there he says, no private citizen shall have the right to dye or sell purple cloth, and here he's talking about argaman, but in a general sense. And then he says specifically in the colors called blata, oxyblata, or hyacinthina. Hyacinthina is, of course, tchelet, the blue of tchelet. So if anybody deals with or owns tchelet or argaman, if anyone should sell the aforementioned dyed wool, says Justinian, let him know that he risks losing his property and his life. So it's clear that the Romans actually were just as bad as monstrous poisonous spiders. And so it seems clear that this is what was the Sifri is talking about when it says that it's very, very dangerous to get tchelet or to deal with tchelet. But in fact, the problem here with what we have in the name of Rabbi Yossi brought down in the Sifri, it actually has a more direct problem associated with it, which is this. So Rabbi Yossi is living here in the early 2nd century. And we know, not just from Justinian, of course, if you're going to make laws that people should not do something, it means that there is a potential for people to do that, which you are warning them not to do. So even from the idea that Justinian is outlawing Tchelet, well, it's already clear that people are using Tchelet. Well, if Rav Yossi is saying that Tchelet was nignaz, was hidden away, that's actually problematic, because we know that Tchelet was in use. Not just from Justinian, we know that from our sources as well. And here are just a few from later sources within the Talmud, within the Gemara. In the 3rd century, Rav Yehuda bar Yechezkel, Rami Tchilta, Leperizoma de Inche de Beite, in Menachot Mem, Amud Bey. So Rav Yehuda bar Yechezkel is tying Tchelet for the people of his house. And then you have even a little later, in the middle of the 4th century, Shalchu leilirava, zug ba mireket v'tafaso nesher, uviyadam devarim anasim beluzu mainihu tchelet. So here we're talking about people who tried to smuggle tchelet out of Eretz Yisrael, where tchelet was being made, into Bavel. And of course, it was dangerous. I'm not saying it wasn't dangerous. And they almost were killed by this nesher. Of course, that is another metaphor for Rome. B'zchut arachamim u'zchutam yatzu b'shalom. So thank God they were able to make it out of this predicament alive. But clearly here you have people that are using Tchelet, that are smuggling Tchelet, that are making Tchelet. This is Sanhedrin Yud Beis, Amud Aleph. Abaye, when Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yehuda reaches Bavel from Eretz Yisrael. And of course, Abaye is very, very interested to know how exactly was Tchelet made. So he asks Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yehuda, Hatchilta, Hechet Savita Leho? And Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda answers this question, Tchelet, how is it made? How do you make it? And he tells Abaye how they make it. So here again, Tchelet is available, Tchelet is being made. It may be difficult to obtain, but it's still there. And all the way up till almost the end of the Talmud Bavli, in the years of Rav Achai bar Rav Huna, who died around the year 504, Mar Mimashchi, a certain person from the town of Mashchi, was bringing Tchelet, and they were checking it with all of these different tests. And that's a Gemara Menachot Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. So clearly you have, for hundreds and hundreds of years after the story of Rav Yossi and the fishermen on the beaches of Rosh HaNikra, you have Tchelet is available, Tchelet is being made, Tchelet is being smuggled, Tchelet is being tested. So the idea that Rav Yossi tells us that it was Nignaz, it was hidden away, never to be found, well, that's clearly not the case. So what exactly is going on here in this Medrash about Rav Yossi and the fishermen? And I would say, you know, okay, so you have this Medrash and take it at face value, but you wonder, why is it that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai chose to include this fantastic Medrash in the story about spiders, and in the way he does bring it in? Why actually does he bring down this story altogether in the Sifri? And again, maybe I would let this go. I would say, well, you know, there are many things that are in the Medrash that we don't understand why they're there. I could let it go. But the problem is that this is not the only time that we find Rabbi Yossi HaGlili in the context of Tchelet. In fact, we find him involved in Machloket, one of the most fundamental Machloketim with respect to Tchelet, and I might venture to say, in fact, the most important argument in terms of halacha with respect to Tchelet. And Rav Yossi is brought down there as one of the sides in that machloket. And so I might say that if it was, you know, kind of a throwaway medrash, and something that was just there, you could take it at face value. But given the fact that Rav Yossi plays such an important part that we'll see right now in this machloket, it makes one wonder if Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is not trying to tell us something else, something deeper, with respect to this Medrash. Now, the Machloket that I'm talking about is, of course, in the beginning of Perak Tchelet. The Mishnah in Menachos, we're talking about Menachot Afram and Chet, and we're talking about the Mishnah, HaTchelet Eina Me'akevet Et HaLavan VeHaLavan Eino Me'akevet HaTchelet. Tchelet, if one doesn't have Tchelet, then you can wear white. If one doesn't have white, you can wear Tchelet. This is a fundamental premise that we have, Psak Halacha, that the Mishnah gives us, that Rabbi Rav Yehuda Anasi gives us in the Mishnah. And based on that, we are wearing Tchelet, or we have worn Tchelet for the last 1,300 years, even though we didn't have Tchelet. This is a very, very important Halacha. And interestingly enough, though, even though, again, the Mishnah is stating something that seems that no one is arguing with it, but right after the Mishnah, the Gemara right away says, Lema matitin delo kerebi. We're going to say that this Mishnah is arguing, in fact, with none other than Rebbe Rav Yehuda Anasi, who actually edited the Mishnah. And Rebbe has a different opinion, which is brought down Ditanya and Ebraita. Rebbe says, Re'item oto, the Pasuk in Parsha Shlach, that you look at the Tchelet. Well, looking at it is actually something, oto, re'item oto, means you look at the string of Tchelet. That's the actual translation, or the actual intent of the phrase, re'item oto. Oto is singular, masculine, and it means that you will look at the petil Tchelet. So the Torah itself tells us that the mitzvah is there in order that we should look at the Tchelet string. So if that's the case, says Rebbe, Milamei Shema Akvin Tzeetze, Well, you can't look at the tchelet string if you don't have the tchelet string, and therefore, the whole point of the mitzvah of tchelet is not there. Divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe is actually telling us, and is actually of the opinion, that if you don't have tchelet, well then, you cannot wear tzitzis altogether. Later on the next daf, Rabbi Chesam Beis, the Gemara says, well, who is it actually that argues with Rebbe and says that tchelet can be worn without white, white can be worn without tchelet? Uman tana de poligaleha de Rebbe? Well, who is it that argues with Rebbe? Rabbi Yitzchak Omer Mishum Rabbi Natan Shamar Mishum Rabbi Yossi Haglili Mishum Rabbi Yochanan Ben Duri. Well, actually, Rabbi Yossi Haglili is the source of the person who argues here. Rabbi Yossi Haglili, in the name of his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Duri, they have both said, Ein lo tchelet matil lavan. If you don't have tchelet, you can put white, you can wear tzitzis with white on it. So Rabbi Yossi Haglili comes up in this context, arguing with Rebbe. A fundamental machloket. What does one do if they have no tchelet? Do you not wear tzitzit altogether? That's Rebbe's opinion. Or do you at least wear white, which is the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, and the opinion that the Mishnah adopted? And actually, this is a very interesting situation. I might ask, why is it that Rebbe chooses to record in the Mishnah only the opinion, tchelet eidema kevet alavan? If you don't have tchelet, you can wear white. This is really the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Haglili, and he states it as if this is unequivocal, that nobody argues with it. Yet we know that he himself argued with this psak halacha. Very strange. I'd like to propose an answer to many of these questions, all of these questions, in fact. And the proposal is based on something that was originally written by someone by the name of Baruch Chizik in a pamphlet called Otsar HaTzimachim, which dates to 1944. And maybe just a few words about Baruch Chizik, who I had never heard of before, but I had the opportunity now to do a little bit of research into his life, and I have to say that he was an absolutely phenomenally interesting person. He came to Israel in 1906. He made Aliyah. He, with his family, his parents actually, and there were 10 siblings altogether, brothers and sisters. Baruch learned botany and agriculture in the Crimea, in southern Russia. And it seems that he also at that time learned Torah, Tanakh, Talmud, Mishnah, Medrash. His botany, he actually went to school to learn. Everything else he was self-taught. He was an autodidact. When you read his writings, you can see that he was an absolutely phenomenal scholar in terms of the breadth of his knowledge and the depth as well. He knew so many different languages. He writes in Arabic and Latin and Greek, of course Hebrew, and his own Russian, English. Quite a phenomenal individual in terms of his knowledge. Science. He was, when he came to Israel, his family, they were all great Zionists. Baruch himself was one of the founders of the Polyet Zion movement back in Russia. His siblings, a sister of his fell in the battle of Tel Chai. She fought together with Trumpeldor. Another brother fell. It was a war hero. He fell at the Battle of Chulda. So quite an important family. He himself was a great agriculturalist, if you will. In 1919, he became the chief gardener of the Turkish Empire, a position I did not know existed. And he went to Damascus and was asked there to plant the trees that would line the the main thoroughfare in Damascus. There he met his wife, Sarah, and they came back and lived in Israel. They taught for a while. He lived for a while in Mikveh Yisrael in Yerushalayim, back of Mei Sharim. Then he joined a new moshav called Herzliya. There he set up a farm, and he helped many of the farmers around there with their crops. He brought many, many new types of crops and trees and fruits into Eretz Yisrael, into Israel. He brought an Erez Halavanon and planted it in Herzliya. He planted pistachio trees in Gush Etzion, and did many, many things with his hands, planting, experiments on crops. Did quite a bit for the early yeshuv in terms of agriculture. But he was really, first and foremost, I think, and in his heart, Ish Ruach. He was quite a scholar, and he wrote quite proficiently. And he puts out this Otzar HaTzmachim, which came out as pamphlets, but eventually it's an entire encyclopedia of all plants, flora and fauna, mainly in Eretz Yisrael. And he did a lot to talk about what exactly, in terms of the Tanakh, what exactly you're talking about when we talk about certain plants. So Baruch Chizik, a great man, after he died, he donated his house to the Herzliya municipality, and people can still go there. I just visited there. It's called Beit HaRishonim on Rehov HaNadiv in Herzliya, and now it's a museum that tells about the early days of Herzliya, and it's quite interesting. You can go and you can actually see some of the trees that Baruch himself planted on the grounds. There's a phenomenal magnolia tree that they say is the largest magnolia tree in all of the Middle East. So Baruch Chizik, Zichrono Levracha, a man who I think deserves to be better known. So, what I'm going to say now is based on what he says in Otzar HaTzmachim, in Choveret Chaf Dalet, in the 22nd volume, and he talks about Tchelet there, and alludes to this question that I've been raising about Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda HaNasi in this Medrash, and also this very, very strange and interesting machloket between Rav Yossi HaGlili, who says that if you don't have tchelet, then you can still wear white, and Rebbe, who says, no, tchelet is ma'akevet alavan. If you don't have tchelet, you don't even wear white. You don't wear tzitzis at all. Rav Yossi HaGlili lived in the beginning of the 2nd century. Now, you know there were 3 major rebellions of the Jews against Rome between the period of 66 and, let's say, 136. So those 70 years or so, there were 3 major rebellions. We generally think of 2 of those rebellions, the Mered HaGadol, of course, the Great Revolt, which led to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash in the year 70, and then, of course, the Mered Bar Kokhba, year 135, the great revolt of the Jews against Rome in the time of Hadrian. But there was sandwiched between there, from the years 115 to 117, another revolt, and that revolt is called by Chazal the Pulmus of Kitus. Lucius Quietus, Kitus in Chazal's term, what Chazal call him, was a general for Trajan, the emperor. And Trajan had a campaign in Mesopotamia against the Parthians, in which he was doing very, very well. Was really poised to conquer all of Mesopotamia, Persia, Iran, Iraq, that whole area. And then, behind the lines, all over the kingdom, there was a rebellion of the people, and historians call this the Mered HaTfutzot, which was a rebellion of the diaspora, if you will, and the Jews took a very, very great part in that rebellion against Trajan. From Libya in North Africa through Alexandria in Egypt, in Israel, of course, and up in Turkey, up all the way to Turkey, there was a rebellion against Trajan, and as I said, the Jews were really part of that, if not leading that revolt. So much so that Trajan had to actually halt his campaign and was never really able to finish off that conquest, which actually in the end was quite fortuitous for the Jews, because the Persians, the Persian Empire later on in Babel and even under Muslim rule, that was always a place where Jews could find safe haven relatively. So when times were bad for the Jews in the East and in Eretz Israel, they were able to find safe haven in Babel, and that may not have been the case had Trajan succeeded and had the Romans conquered that area. Who knows what would have happened? But unfortunately for the Jews of the revolt, this Pulmus of Quitus Wars, this was a very, very tragic time. The revolt was put down very, very heavily in North Africa, in Alexandria. The Jewish community of Alexandria was essentially extinguished, killed to the last man, woman, child. Some people put that as many as 1 million Jews that lived in Alexandria that were slaughtered. Lucius Quietus, who was a general for Trajan, was brought back and became the procurator of Eretz Israel. And there, again, he quelled the uprising, which was centered, by the way, in Lud. And so when the Talmud, when the Gemara speaks about the Meitei Lud, those people who died in Lud, we're talking about this merit, about the Pulmus of Quitus, about these wars with Lucius Quietus. So Rav Yossi Aglili is living in this time. One of the things that we know about the period of Quietus is the fact that he instituted persecutions against the Jews, gezeirot, against their religion, and specifically, historians tell us, that anything with any kind of a national character was something that Quietus was quite strict in enforcing regulations against. So the Jews were not allowed to show any kind of a national anything with a national character. They were not allowed to perform certain mitzvot. So what I'd like to propose is that Rav Yossi Aglili, living exactly at this time of Quitus, he's faced actually with an interesting situation that never before happened in the history of the Jewish people. I'd like to propose that one of the gezerot that Quietus had, and it would make perfect sense again, what has more of a national character than the actual uniform of the Jewish people? What set them apart from anybody else was the tchelet that they wore. Every Jew wore tchelet on their clothes, and this was known as something that the Jews were known for the early Christian writings, where you have Just Martyr arguing with the Jew Tryphon, and there he speaks about the tchelet that the Jews were wearing. So this was something that was known as really something that set the Jews apart from anybody else, their tzitzit, and specifically the tchelet on their tzitzit. Well, if it's true then that Lucius Quietus regulated against the use of tchelet in the times of Rav Yossi Aglili, then you have a situation that really, for the first time in Jewish history, you had to deal with a question. You see, you've always had times when people couldn't keep a mitzvah, this mitzvah, that mitzvah. And Jews would do the best that they could. You didn't have tefillin, you couldn't keep Shabbat, couldn't keep kosher, whatever it was. If there were extenuating circumstances and you couldn't keep a mitzvah for whatever reason, then you did the best that you could. And of course, the halacha talks about those situations. But here you had a different situation, where specifically it was dangerous to wear the tchelet. No one had a problem with people wearing white tzitzit, But the government here, in the name of Lushesor, in the name of quietus, is telling you that you can't wear specifically the tchilat. And Rav Yossi Aglili, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, they have to deal with this question, recognizing that the fundamental component of the tzitzit is the tchilat. They have to ask the question and answer the question, well, what does one do when he doesn't have tchilat? Maybe we shouldn't wear tzitzis altogether. That would be the case, for example, if you didn't have an etrog, right? So you don't bring three of the other things, right? The hadas and the lulav and the aravot. No, you wouldn't do anything. If you don't have one of the fundamental components of the mitzvah, in certain cases, you wouldn't do the mitzvah at all. It doesn't make sense to. Well, is tchelet and lavan, are the blue and the white of the tzitzit, are they like the lulav and etrog? If you don't have one, you don't do any? That was a question that really, for the first time in history, of Yossi Aglili has to deal with. And he made a very, very bold, a very daring psak halacha, and he comes out and he says, no, in this case that we're in now, where the emperor, the empire, the government is telling us that we can't wear tchelet, if somebody can't get tchelet, then he should still keep the mitzvah tzitzit with white. And that's Rav Yossi Aglili's amazing chiddush and his amazingly innovative psak halacha. Now fast forward 100 years. Now we're in the time of Rebbe and Antoninus. And at this time, the relations between the Jews and the Roman Empire have changed dramatically. Rebbe is very, very friendly with the Roman Empire, with the Roman Emperor. And you can imagine that at this time, there probably was no problem, as far as the Romans were concerned, with Jews wearing tchelet. But I'm going to suggest that Rebbe found now that he had a different problem. You see, I'm saying in Rebbe's Kehillah, there were probably people who, even though the restrictions against tchelet had already been lifted, or at least were relaxed in the time of Rebbe, nonetheless, the psak halacha of Rabbi Yossi Haglili from the previous century was still out there. And so Rabbi Yossi had told everybody, well, if you don't have tchelet, you can wear white. So I would imagine that there are people in Rebbe's Kehillah who are thinking to themselves, you know what? It's very expensive to wear tchelet. Tchelet had always been expensive. It was worth up to 20 times its weight in gold. And maybe it was still difficult, maybe somewhat dangerous, not so much as it was in the time of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, but maybe it was still difficult. People were poor. For whatever the reasons, the psak halacha of Rabbi Yossi Aglili is already out there now. And people are using, or I should say misusing, that psak halacha. People are coming along and saying, if I don't have tchelet, I'll wear white. What's the big problem? Well, in that case, Rebbe has to come back and he has to swing back and say, no. If tchelet is there, but it's difficult to obtain, maybe it's a little bit expensive, tchelet ma'akev et halava. No. You can't just decide for whatever reason that it's inconvenient to wear a tchelet and therefore you'll wear white. You have to go and make every effort, every possible effort, to actually obtain tchelet. Because that's the most important part of the mitzvah. Rebbe doesn't forget, uritem oto, that's what's written in the Torah. You have to look at it, at the petil tchelet. That's the main function, the main purpose of the mitzvah, to remind you of the relationship between God and the Jewish people, and that is symbolized by the tchelet. If you don't have tchelet, go get tchelet. If it's difficult, work harder. If it's expensive, save up until you can afford it. And so Rebbe comes along and says, tchelet ma'akev et halavan. Tchelet, if you don't have tchelet, that's a problem. Make sure that you do have tchelet. Okay. But if I'm going to assume that this is the case, you see, Rebbe understands that the relationship between the Jews and the Romans is quite precarious. Things could change at any time. And so Rebbe, in the Mishnah, he actually brings down the opinion of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. Tchelet eina ma'akevet et alavan. If you don't have tchelet, you do wear white. Even though he himself, in his context, in his kehilah, the psak halacha that he gives to his students is that they should go and make every effort to go out and find tchelet and wear tchelet. L'dorot, that which is the psak halacha that everyone will know for now and forever, is that if tchelet really is not available, then at tchelet eina ma'akevet et halavan. And I propose that the Mishnah, Rebbe, and Rabbi Yossi HaGlili are not actually really arguing. They're talking about a different context. Rabbi Yossi HaGlili is the first to tell us that if tchelet is really, really, really difficult to obtain, if it's something that nobody can get, then at least you should wear white. Rebbe agrees to that on a fundamental basis in the Mishnah. And that's why he quotes Rabbi Yossi HaGlili without even arguing on it, without even bringing down his other opinion. But he says that in his context, to his generation, to the people who can really get tchelet, but just are not making the effort to go out and get the tchelet, to them he says, ha-tchelet ma'akevet alavan. Tchelet actually is something very, very, very important and fundamental. And I believe that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai actually is recording this in his Sifri, in the story that he tells about Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. Because he already years after, tens of years afterwards, again, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is a student of Rabbi Akiva, was a contemporary of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. So years later, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai wants everybody to understand the context that Rabbi Yossi was talking about when he gave this incredibly bold psak halacha that tzitzis makes sense even without tchelet. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai records this story of Rabbi Yossi to tell you that he's talking about a time when tchelet is guarded by poisonous spiders, and anybody who goes near it will be killed. The Romans, under Lucius, under Hadrian, those Romans are not going to allow you to wear tchelet. If it's a question of risking your life, well then, better to wear white. And so, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that Rav Yossi was talking about a very, very, very specific situation when tchelet really wasn't available. Not that it didn't exist in the world, but that no Jew could really be asked, be expected to wear tchelet when it was so, so dangerous, when it was so difficult to obtain, when really one had to risk their life to wear tchelet. And I'll say further that the Tanchuma, in fact, probably alludes to this, or at least nods to this idea, when it chooses the word to tell you v'achshav, later on, now, hundreds of years later, v'achshav ein lanu elo lavan sha'atcheret nignaz. And the Tanchuma chooses to use the word nignaz, that same word that was used by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai when he talks about the story of Rav Yossi. Right? Nikar hu she'nignaz l'tzadikim l'atid lavo. Because it's not nitalam, it's not that it disappeared from the world, that it doesn't exist. It's nignaz. Nignaz is a temporary situation. It was nignaz temporarily in the time of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, and then later on it came back, all throughout the Gemara, as we've seen, certainly in the time of Rebbe. And of course, when you could wear tchelet, you did wear tchelet. You had to work very, very hard to obtain tchelet, no matter how much it cost, no matter how hard it was. Of course, maybe you didn't have to risk your life for it. But this is something I believe that maybe the Tanchuma is even alluding to when it uses this word nignaz. It's temporarily unavailable to us. It's been hidden away. If it should come back, then do all you can to get it. And I think that that's the way that many, many, many people looked at tchelet throughout the generations. And I'd just like to quote two as we close up. The first is from the Likutei Tefillot of Rav Nachman Mibreslov. And this is what Rav Nachman used to say every single day when he would put on his talis. Of course, Rav Nachman didn't have tchelet. V'yihi ratzon lefanecha, he would say when he put on his talis, shetehei chashuva mitzvat tzitzit she'anu osin mitzemer lavan ki'ilu kiyamnu gam mitzvat tchelet shebat tzitzit. So he makes a a declaration asking God to count the mitzvah that he is doing with his white strings as if he were also wearing tchelet. Ki galui v'yadua, he goes on to say, ki galui v'yadua lifanecha, it's well known before you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sheritzoneinu lasot ritzoncha, that we want to do your will. V'anu chafetzim u'mitga'agim l'kayem mitzvah tchelet shebat tzitzit, and we just long, we wish we could keep the mitzvah of tchelet shebat tzitzit. V'im ayinu zochim l'mitzot tchelet l'tzitzit, hayinu mifazrim hon rav kidei l'kayem ha-mitzvah b'shleimut. And if only we could obtain tchelet, no matter how much it cost, we would be willing to pay in order to keep the mitzvah tzitzit in its full in its fullness, b'shleimut. Ach, he goes on, Rav Nachman, ba'avonotenu harabim charav beit mikdashenu v'nitalam achilazon ba'avonotenu. Unfortunately, we don't have the chilazon, the source of the tchelet, u'me'az v'hala, ein anu zochim l'kayem mitzvatcha b'shleimut, and we can't keep the mitzvah of tchelet and the mitzvah of tzitzit the way it should be fulfilled. Al-keini hirason, this is the end of his tefillah, milfanecha. May it be your will, shetehei chashuvan mitzvah tzitzit, lavan l'fanecha ki'ilu kiyamnu mitzvah tchelet shebat tzitzit. As if we wish that the mitzvah of lavan, of white, is as if we had tchelet, and count that for us. V'rachem aleinu, have mercy on us, u'bnei ircha b'mehera b'yameinu, build up your city speedily in our days, v'havienu l'shalom l'eretz ha'kdosha, please, God, bring us to the Holy Land, v'zakenu sheyachzor v'yitgaleh achilazon, and may we merit that once again we find out what the true chilazon is, the source of tchelet, v'nizkeh l'kayem mitzvah tchelet shebat tzitzit. And along these lines of Yaakov Emden in the Yarat HaDvash says, as a straightforward halacha, v'lachein chova al kol ish, it is every person is obligated, b'simot tzitzit b'vigdo, when he puts the tzitzit on his garment, lizkor mitzvat hatchelet, to remember the mitzvah of tchelet, u'leanech b'shivron motnayim, and to sigh with great sadness, al asher I efshar lekayem ha-mitzvah b'shleimut, on the fact that he is unable to keep the mitzvah as it should be. And I'd just like to end on this note. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, when he made the groundbreaking Psak Halacha, that Tchelet Eina Ma'akev Et Halavan, that Tchelet Eina Ma'akev Et Halavan, that Tchelet does not restrict one from wearing white. This was done, as Rav Yaakov Emden says, with a great, heavy, heavy heart. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai had to emphasize that by telling us this fantastic story of just how difficult it was in the time of Rav Yossi Aglili to obtain tchelet. And I think that Rebbe again stresses that. If only you could get tchelet, well, don't think that you should be mekayim the mitzvah of Lavan and that you're doing perfectly. You're not doing fine. Try harder. Do what you can to find the chilazon and to get tchelet. And this is something that brings us down all the way to our days. Someone who can wear tchelet should wear tchelet. Now, the reason for not wearing tchelet may be that there are rabbis that you follow who say that one should not wear tchelet today. Maybe there are other reasons, halachic reasons, if you will, that one doesn't wear tchelet today. And it's a machloket, it's an argument till this day. Some people say you should wear tchelet, some people you shouldn't wear tchelet. Maybe we have found the chilazon, maybe we haven't found the chilazon. And those are reasons why one should or should not wear tchelet. But there's nothing that should stop someone who decides that they're not going to wear tchelet from having this incredibly heavy heart and wishing that one day he could have tchelet. And at least in the way that I understand these midrashim and these halachot, for someone to use as an excuse the idea of nignaz as a reason for not wearing tchelet, I think that's something that distorts the original intention of Rav Yossi Aglili and the Tanchuma. Nignaz, perhaps, that tchelet was hidden away. But if Rav Yossi Aglili would have had the opportunity to actually wear tchelet, right? if that fisherman would have taken out that day a string of tchelet and given it to Rav Yossi Haglili and said, here it is, tchelet. You know, it's very, very hard to get. You got these poison spiders, who knows? But nonetheless, here, I'm gonna tell you, I've got one for you. I don't think Rav Yossi would have said, no, I can't wear tchelet. Ignazgut tzadikim latid lavo. That's not what Rav Yossi Haglili is saying. I wish I could wear tchelet. If I had tchelet, of course I would wear it. But I don't have it. And we sigh with a heavy heart over the fact that we don't have tchelet. And for those who actually can and do wear tchelet today, then I think that this is a magnificent, magnificent opportunity to leave behind the idea of nignaz that was imposed upon us by the Romans. Leave that behind, and to once again celebrate the fact that we live in a time where we can wear tchelet and do wear tchelet with our heads held high.